listener production.
Coming up on today's edition of Footy Talk, all the discussion at the moment is around Port Adelaide and their succession plan. We pick the brain of Nathan Jones. Take a look at what's coming up tomorrow night between the Demons and the Lions. Are Brisbane cooked if they go under tomorrow night? We talk Harley Reid, the West Coast Eagles, and Sam Taylor on Footy Talk. So great to have your company on Footy Talk. It is the Wednesday edition where we do look at the footy world a little bit different. We take the player's point of view and we give you insight to what it's like to be behind the headlines and all of the stuff that happens in clubland. I'm Jack Heverin, Abby Holmes, as always, alongside me. Abs, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Nathan Jones, good to see you.
Morning, guys. Nice to be back.
And we start with a bit of a sad note this morning. Normally, we like to have a little bit of a mess around off the top and talk about what everyone's up to, but we are recording this just before lunchtime on a Wednesday, for full disclosure, and we've just learnt in the last half an hour the sad and tragic news, Abby, of the shock passing of Channel 7 personality Nathan Templeton.
Yeah, shattered and genuine shock this morning. I literally just logged onto Instagram and it was the first thing that came up. And Nathan Templeton has worked at the Seven Network for a number of years now, for a very long time, and is adored by all of us at Seven Sport and also, you know, the Sunrise family as well. So it's been reported that he, unfortunately passed away walking his dog. Mm. You know, 44 years of age. He's got two young children too. So as I said, very, very sad to hear this news, and our thoughts are with his family.
Jones, it's just a reminder of how quickly life can change.
Mm. Yeah, when I saw that this morning, I was in shock and just thinking, you know, how and why. Like, but as you said, it puts it into perspective, right? The trivial things that you might argue about or worry about, or you know, that take away from the things that really matter in life, and how quickly life can then just be taken away from you, like literally a click of the finger. And it makes you worry, really. But that's the thing, right? You just got to live life to the fullest without knowing what's kind of coming, because you never know.
Yeah.
It's sad, and our thoughts with him and his family and his children and extended family and friends.
No doubt, and there'll be a lot of people in the industry hurting right now. He's a very good person and a very popular person in the industry as well. So, as Jonesy said, our thoughts and prayers are with Nathan's family during what is going to be a horrible time for them. Let's talk Gather Round to start with. Abs, you and I were there. I must admit, it was my first time at Gather Round. I didn't go
first
last
timer.
I absolutely loved it. I think this concept is a total winner. It is brilliant from start to finish.
Absolutely. And South Australia nailed it again, didn't they? You look at what they did last year and how impressive that was off the back of, what, 3 or 4 months preparation. Whereas they saw the success that they had year one. They've now had 12 months of planning, preparation, lead in and roll out. And they did it superbly. Peter Malinauskas, he is a king.
I think we
all love him.
Come to Victoria, please.
No. We love him over in South Australia. But just listening to him speak throughout the 4 days, 5 days that we were over there, his passion for not only South Australia, but for football, for events, and just doing them and doing them incredibly well. He is amazing. He's got an incredible team. But the AFL, everybody involved, broadcasters, media, everybody had an absolute ball.
Went up to Mount Barker on Saturday, Jonesy. We had a little minivan with Daisy Thomas and Kate McCarthy and Ryan Daniels from this show was in the van as well. We had a blast up there. It was like old school sort of country footy, but on a bigger scale. It was brilliant.
Yeah, look, I wasn't over there this weekend. I was there the weekend before, and you could already get a sense of what was actually coming, just with what was happening, the activations being built in the city. And I absolutely sat at home thinking, oh, I feel like I'm missing out here.
FOMO.
I absolutely had FOMO. Yeah, I agree with you. I think the concept's terrific, and the city is abuzz. And it just puts footy in perspective with how much it means to community. And it's like the whole of Australia really kind of immerses itself in the game for the weekend in all different kind of facets. Like there's the games itself and the trainings and the activations, but then there's, I had mates going over there for business conferences, and obviously there was the boxing on the Wednesday night. Like it was just, the city would have been a light for a week. which is awesome to see. And I think it's something that potentially may grow out is the murmurings into, you know, opportunities when Tasmania enters. And you know, I had a crack with it in the opening round sort of thing with Sydney, but I think Adelaide do it the best.
Does it surprise you, Hef, that there are a few people out there that are potentially trying to put the lid back on it and say it's not as good as it seems? I mean, we all loved it. Everybody who had 2 feet on the ground loved it.
Well, it's the world we live in, isn't it? We can't have something good because someone's got to say that it's bad. I can only assume that if you don't think it's a winner, you couldn't have been there.
Mm.
That's my only take out of it is if you walk around, I landed about lunchtime Friday and the best thing I did, I reckon, for the weekend was just put the bags in the hotel, go for a walk into Rundle Mall and get a coffee and just look around. Because everything you just said, Jonesy, there are people that have come from all over Australia and they're celebrating footy. They just bloody love footy and they're walking around in their jumpers and
their
scarves.
Every club represented. It was so good.
And people talking to each other that had no knowledge of each other beforehand, all that sort of stuff. It's just awesome. And I think people saying that the media are drinking the AFL's special potion and saying what the AFL want us to say. We're not saying anything. We just went there and had a great time.
Mm.
Simple as that.
Agreed.
It was awesome. Long may it live, gather around. Long may it live.
In South Australia.
In South Australia. And nowhere else. A lot of talk in the last 24 hours about successions plans. It's back on the agenda again. We've seen them work for the good, and then we've seen them work for the very, very bad along the way when it comes to coaching succession plans as well. The latest one to be discussed is Ken Hinckley's suggestions of a handshake deal at the end of next season with Josh Carr to take over at Port Adelaide. Thoughts?
Not a fan. Not a fan. And so what happens this year if Port come out and win the grand final? Are you still going to get rid of Ken Hinckley in 12 months' time?
Don't yell at me.
Oh, I know.
She's
fine.
I know.
We're going to come to Jonesy because you've obviously been through it with Ruse and Goody. But I don't like it because that's the thing. Koshy came out last year and said certain things, and then Port Adelaide went on a 13-game winning streak? And Ken Hinckley is an absolute king and he's, you know, there for the long term or whatever it might be. But to hear now, and it was Caroline Wilson that came out on Monday night and reported this, that there is a handshake deal with Josh Carr that he will take over after the end of 2025. What happens if Port Adelaide win back-to-back flags in the next 18 months? Are they still going to, hand over?
Has this been confirmed by Port?
Not entirely. Yeah. So David Koch spoke
I'm shocked, right? The experience I had was different. We're absolutely on the rebuild from ground zero.
Yes.
But Ken has rebuilt the list into, premiership contending, and their window is opening with the youth that is now leading that squad. And they've got a terrific balance between, as I said, sort of senior and youth guys coming through. And I'd be surprised. And I agree with you, Abs. I think, what happens if they shoot the lights out? And they're, the top four contending team this season. There's no reason why they won't be back there again next season with the profile of their list.
Totally.
They're just going to hand it over to Josh Carr. Now, the only way that this could possibly work is if Hinckley is resigned to the fact that he's just had enough and he's going to wind himself up.
Which he hasn't totally said yet. So he spoke on the weekend as well and said that if anyone's going to be the next person at Port Adelaide, he would want that to be Josh Carr, and he's hoping that he can help Josh be ready for it. But he hasn't actually said that
he's
ready to step away.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. You'd be shocked that if they were to come out and finish top four and play finals, prelim, snag a premiership, anything can happen in the next couple of years. I find it hard to believe that he'd be like, all right, yep, sweet, I'm done. See you guys, I'm out. Because he's kind of put in all that groundwork.
So what's that like from a player's point of view? As I say, you lived it. You understood it. I think the Ruse and Goodwin situation was more clear cut from the start. Ruse was only ever going to be there for a short time.
Yeah, 100%.
And Simon was always going to be the one, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, once he was appointed, they'd kind of gone through that process. Yeah, absolutely. And that was it was obvious from the beginning. I think Ruse had initially committed to, signed a third. They went on that hunt for it, the succession, and it was clear that he was going to, coach an assistant into that position. I'm kind of finding it hard to get my head around it with the Hinckley Carr situation, considering just where their list profile's at, where they're at on the ladder at the moment, and you'd suspect them to be there again next year.
It's a timing thing, isn't it? Yeah. We've seen it with Hawthorn. It did not work. Clarko and Sam Mitchell as well, but they're in a real. They were in a rebuild situation too. Yeah. You guys were.
But again, that's another little bit of a difference to the situation, right? Like Clarko didn't seem ready to be wanting to give that away, yeah. And he's kind of forced his hand, and that's why I asked the question, like. Mm. Well, what's Port's stance on this and what's Ken's stance on this, right? Yeah. Like until you get some clarity on that, hard to judge on how the situation would unfold. But I guess from my experiences it was super clear from the outset with the Melbourne Ruse Goody situation. You know, I think you look at the Hawthorn situation with Clarko, you'd probably look at the Malthouse-Buckley situation.
Yeah, so go back to that one. So that handover was announced. Collingwood won 2010. Then lost the 2011 grand final, and then Bucks took over and took them to a 2012 prelim final as well. But that was, I mean, that was the most messy divorce of all time. Like that made Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin look amicable. Like,
I don't like it's a very, you have to really tiptoe through the situation. Like you're dealing with, you know, obviously the club and its situation and its aspiration to succeed. But then you're also dealing with two individuals, one that's probably aspiring to be a senior coach and another who's, depending on where they're at in their journey personally, you know, maybe wants to hold their position or, you know, sees themselves as a lifelong coach and that's what they want to do and doesn't want to relinquish that responsibility. So it's a PR nightmare for clubs to navigate. But and we haven't really seen many done super well. I think ultimately, probably from my experience, I felt like Melbourne's was as clean as it's been.
Anyone else cooking in here? I was I was freezing when I walked in the studio today, and I've cooked you all.
Go on, just turn the heater off for a second, Abs. We'll just keep going, because it is literally about 650 degrees in here. While we're on the subject of the demons, that was quick by you.
Oh, yes.
Cozzy Pickett suspended last night. Third time in 26 games that he'll be missing. What needs to change, or does he need to change?
Well, we've got the audio of Christian Petrarca last night saying that, you know, he doesn't necessarily think he needs to change the way he goes about it. I probably sit on the other side of the fence. Like, I love the edge in which he plays the game. But, you know, when you look across the stats, the third time in 26 games he's been suspended for very similar action. Like, I think that's now becoming a trend, right? Like, this isn't just a one-off and it continues to occur in a similar fashion. I think he has to make some adjustment to his game because, right, well, we're round four of the season now. What happens if this happens in a prelim and he misses a granny?
Correct.
And I think that's where you just have to try and work with him to try and change the behaviour so it doesn't become a habit and hurt you right at the wrong time. And he's a vital player to the system in the way in which Melbourne play, and they just can't afford to have him missing games. I can see why he did it and how it occurred, but you've got to read the play of where the current state of the game is, and he was never going to get away with it.
And these are tiny little tweaks that we're talking about here. As Christian Petrarca came out and said, we do not want him to change the way that he goes about it, but it's more just mindfulness, isn't it? And understanding the situation, where the game's at the moment, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. But there are certain players in the league that certainly walk the fine line of I guess, the
reportable offences
or
just through their actions. Yeah. And he's one of them, right? Like, I can understand where track's coming from, but I think ultimately you need to work with him to change that. Because it's not like he's been rubbed out three times in 26 matches for different things. It's literally the same thing, jumping off the ground, tucking up to bump, hitting in the head, or at least two of the three that I can remember. So I'm concerned, right? Like, and I think there's been other instances where he's been right on the edge and in some regard lucky, right? He's hit maybe a bit of a bigger guy and hasn't quite copped him in the head. But, yeah, I just don't want to see him miss games.
I don't think anyone wants to see. Yeah. He's so exciting. Yeah.
Absolutely.
For context, here is Christian Petrarca last night on AFL 360.
I don't want him to change the way he plays. I think he plays with an intensity and an edge about him that I, as a teammate, I love playing with. His pressure in the forward 50 is awesome. Mm-hmm. I think I don't want him to lose that edge because I love the way he plays. I think it's such an X factor, such an excitement to the game. And I know opposition players, like I'm scared at training when he's trying to tackle me and trying to chase me down. So I don't want him to lose that aspect of his game.
So that's the Cozzy Pickett issue. You fast forward now, Abs, to what's coming up tomorrow night. Now we'll both be there. You'll be there for 7. Yeah. I'll be there for Triple M Footy. The D's and the Lions. If Brisbane lose this game, are they just about cooked for 2024?
I think yes. I am of the opinion that Brisbane are going to find their groove. It's going to be a great battle tomorrow night at the MCG. Yes, Brisbane don't have the best record at the G. There's no doubt about that. But I do expect that one to be a ripping contest and potentially Brisbane to be on the winning side of that one. But for me, Brisbane need to finish top two, because they need to get a couple of home finals, win their way through at the Gabba to the grand final, and then give themselves the best opportunity on grand final day, because they don't travel as well as other teams. And yeah,
certainly not at the MCG.
Certainly not at the MCG. So yes, that's why I think they need to finish top two to get the two home finals and then win their way through to a grand final. So if they're not in that top two, then it's going to be very hard for Chris Fagan and his men.
Captaincy hat on for a second here, Jonesy. So you've got a massive game tomorrow night and things haven't gone that well. I mean, they haven't been deplorable so far, Brisbane. Some of their losing margins aren't actually that bad. But the fact is that they have only won one game so far. How do you go about preparing this group for a game like this one tomorrow night?
I think they've just got to continue to reinforce the positives, right? Like, so there's no way they're putting a line through the season at this point. And I actually, like, I'm not writing them off. I think they're a good enough side to bounce back. We've seen them bounce back, was it last year, from a similar position of just not starting the year that great and then getting on a real roll. So I think they're well and truly capable. I reckon that, just watching them play, just lacking that kind of cohesion and the continuity, and that breeds confidence and belief in the system and what they're trying to produce. I think for me it would be just reminding them of what they're capable of. And I think there is, as you said, there is some positives in terms of what they have been able to produce at different moments throughout the start of the season. Probably just drawing on that and, I guess all the other sort of Fugazi that you've kind of heard in the in all of the media over the last week or two about, culturally and behind closed doors and what's going on. Mm-hmm. If anything, I think you could look at Melbourne and say, hey, why don't we just try and do what they've done, right? Like bunker down and use that as fuel to motivate you. And I think that's absolutely what they should do. What they should be doing.
Lions in 2021 started the year at 1-3 and then they won 10 of their next 11 games. But what I want to see and what we haven't seen, I think, in the first month is consistency across the board with the Lions. I mean, Danaher popped up and kicked 5 goals, 4 on the weekend against North Melbourne, of course. Hipwood 3-2, but we haven't seen the best of those two in particular. They're two, I guess, key forwards in the first 3 games, and I just really want them to find that level of consistency across the board in the next kind of 6 to 8 weeks.
Plenty to come still here on Footy Talk. Sam Taylor on the agenda on the other side of this. Connor Rosie and Harley Reid. That is all still to come. And of course, if you're listening to us on Spotify, then hit the bell to be notified when we drop a new episode. More to come. Wednesday's edition of Footy Talk. Of course, if you want to get involved with us, it's very, very simple on Instagram at footytalk_pod. Abby Holmes, Nathan Jones and Jack Heverin with your Wednesday edition as we look at the world of footy from a player's perspective and take you inside club land. From a club land point of view right now, Abs, there's a bit of moving and manoeuvring that needs to happen with the GWS Giants when it comes to Sam Taylor.
Oh, I'm interested in this story. Sam Taylor, 24-year-old, one of the best key defenders in the game, of course. He is out of contract at the end of next year, so end of 2025. But news is that GWS are basically trying to have him locked away by the end of this year to ensure that he doesn't go into next year out of contract. And reportedly on 800,000 at the moment, but GWS Giants are looking to make him the highest paid key defender in the game and lock him away for a long-term contract. We've seen what they've done with Cornelio and Kelly in the past. What were they, eight or nine year contracts? But I am all for it. As I said, Sam Taylor, I love watching him play footy. He's only 24 years old. 15-0 in the one-on-one counts so far this year. He just reads the play so well. He is such an important cog to this GWS side and their success that they're no doubt, you know, chasing this year and they're certainly in contention for. But apparently West Coast have basically said to his management, we're here and we are very keen to have a chat with your boy and why wouldn't they be? He's a WA boy as well. So Jonesy, it's going to be very interesting to see if they can lock him away or if that lure to go home might be there.
Well, I think that the last sort of piece you added to the, to your comment about the lure home, I guess that's the biggest question, right? Like, why would you leave GWS other than if he's desperate to go home?
You play footy to win a flag, don't you, though? And it's not happening anytime soon.
Like, they're my favourite team at the minute.
This year, I think.
It could not, it's not happening anytime soon for West Coast, is it?
And I think GWS are going to be able to probably pay him what he's worth. It'd be interesting how they juggle that cap with all these long deals. But I think that's what they're going to have to stump up. And I think they're well aware of it, hence why they're creating that conversation early. But yeah, there'd be other West Coast wouldn't be the only one. I think there'd be other clubs asking, absolutely asking
There's
the question.
17 others, I reckon. Well,
as there should be. Well, maybe 18 if you include Tasmania.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, yeah, there you go. But yeah, like I think, like if it was me in his position, I'd absolutely stay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in a system where he's the number one defender in the game. He's going to get paid well. He's going to get a long-term deal. He's 24 years old and they're going to have a crack at a premiership for however many years. Mm. And he leads that, at least leads the defensive unit. You know, you start to change the variables in all of that and maybe it just doesn't look, I don't think it looks as attractive as making the decision to stay.
So do you think that's a problem, is going to be a problem for the West Coast Eagles? Because the view is that they are so far away at the moment. For a guy like Sam Taylor in his early to mid-20s, guy like Tim English in his mid-20s, who West Coast have said they've got more money than God. They're happy to pay them whatever they want.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about wanting success in the prime of your career, is that going to be a massive stumbling block for the Eagles when it comes to recruiting players?
And that's the seesaw, isn't it? The lure to go home versus playing football to win premierships. And at the end of the day, that's why we all play, is to win flags and have team success. So that's something that he's going to have to work out individually. I personally would be on the team success side of the seesaw. But, you know, we don't know what his, you know, family life's like, if he wants to go home to be closer to his family or whatnot. So you certainly can't knock him if that was, you know, the side that he was leaning on.
I think it is going to be difficult for West Coast, though. Like, absolutely it is. Like, I think they've got incredible facility. They do have a hell of a lot of money and there probably is a lot of personal opportunity in and around. Obviously, they can only pay you what they can pay you via a cap. But, you know, I guess the two-team town, there is, you know, individual opportunity over there to create wealth and develop yourself and opportunity, et cetera. But I still think it's more attractive for mine to stay at GWS.
While we're on the subject of the Eagles, I saw Harley Reid live for the first time on Saturday at Mount Barker. There was that vision of that awesome first goal that he kicked in senior footy, back to goal, shrugs the tackle. Our stats guru, Ethan Meldrum, Harley Reid in just his fourth game, Heath tells us, successfully broke 7 tackles. The all-time record is 8 broken tackles, shared by Dustin Martin, no surprise, and Luke Davies-Uniac. This kid is, he is everything that has been advertised when you see him up close. He is special.
He is, absolutely is. Well, that's like, their number one priority, West Coast's number one priority for me is to lock him down for as long as you can.
Like 20-year deal?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Like a genuine, I think he's absolutely living up to the hype. I think they've done, I think it needs to be acknowledged. I think West Coast has done a good job of being able to kind of support and navigate him through all of that hype and pressure. And he's been able to come out and build his game rather than come out and, you know, just throw him to the wolves kind of thing. And now I think as his confidence is building, we're actually really starting to see, wow, this kid is good. And, mate, I feel like he's only scratching the surface, right? Like he's got years of development still to go, and he's doing stuff that, like, Dusty, obviously one of the absolute greats of the game, and that, like, he's in that mould, capable of, you know, possibly, or even if you could scratch the stratosphere that Dusty reached, he's going to be an elite player.
You mentioned it, though, the amount of pressure that was on this kid, right? Yeah. He's front page, he's back page, he's centre page, he's every page in the West Australian each and every day, right? I was genuinely concerned coming into the season that
He could just pop under all that pressure.
He could pop and, you know, not live up to the hype and the expectation. But this is the sign of a mature head, an incredibly mature head that's come in. He's ready to go straight away and he's living up to the hype and the expectation, as Jonesy said, and he should be very, very proud with what he's producing so far. But this is just the surface.
And you watch him in the warm-ups and just the way that he gets around, there's a bit of riz as well with Harley Reid. So I think he's pretty comfortable with the tag, to be honest. Yeah. I think he'll happily lead this team going forward. Speaking of stars, Sydney have got a lot of them, and they are about to get a couple of them back. So Luke Parker not far away from a broken arm. Callum Mills is a little bit further off. But for you two, you've been involved in these sorts of conversations where the coach has to sit down and say, look, I know you like to play here, but at the moment we're doing something that's been working while you haven't been here, so we're going to need you to go and do this instead. How does that whole conversation flow happen?
Don't fix what's not broke. Yeah. And look, Isaac Heaney, what he has produced over the first month of football, you cannot take him out of that midfield group. So you understand, obviously, your captain is coming back. Mills, I don't think there would be any concern with him coming back in. But you look at Parker, right? This is somebody who is proven midfielder.
Yep.
Proven midfielder. We all love the way that he goes about his footy, but he might be one that potentially has to work his way back in there. Because, as you said, you can't fault what that midfield group has been doing in the early start or early part of this season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't. There's no way. At least Heaney isn't the one to come out of there. But like, what they're producing as a unit, the byproduct is the level in which Heaney's playing. Right. So you add another ingredient into that. Can it still work the same way? So for me, it's more of a feeling out process. Like, I think you bring Parker back in.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely bring him back in. But it's not like a straight, all right, we'll send Heaney back forward and you take his minutes.
That's what I meant as well, by the way. He comes into the side, but potentially not straight into that midfield group.
Maybe it's in a bit of a different role, right? Yep. Like, he has probably, like, I've seen him play really well as a forward. So maybe comes in as a forward and spends less minutes as a mid. And, you know, they may be able to get some sort of continuity where Parker and Heaney roll through there with Heaney actually taking more of the time now rather than it was probably the other way around in years gone by. But, mate, he's the number one player in the game right now, highest ranked player.
You think so? Yeah,
absolutely. I think it's proven with AFL from an AFL player rating, like his impact on games is as good as it's been.
Jonesy certainly articulated that better than I did. I think Luke Parker Parker definitely comes into the side, but potentially more forward minutes than midfield until he can work his way back in.
Good problem for John Longmire to have, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Great. Mate, be cheering.
I like the Swans. I like the way they play. I think, you know, we all loved Buddy, but I think the fact that now he's gone, it's opened up different avenues to goal. They're more multi-pronged and they've got this like kind of edge to them, particularly around the footy. They're hard and tough. It's very Sydney-like. But, yeah, and I admire John Longmire so much, like his evolution as a coach, listening to how he was. My brother played under him early days and how he's progressed and come along and developed himself and now being able to engage a much younger list and group. He's underrated for mine in terms of quality of coaching.
Let me throw one at both of you to finish up here. Now, this is without a lot of notice, so this was the whole point, to catch you on the fly a little bit. Four rounds, or five rounds in for some, into the season.
Gets you, doesn't it, the old round zero?
It's rattled me.
You should see my notebook for game commentary. I've got whiteout everywhere. I'm like, is that round one or is that round zero? And AFL tables have sort of done their own thing and it's thrown me out a little bit. Out of what we've seen so far, who's been the most convincing and most disappointing team-wise? Let's start with a positive. Who's been the most convincing team for you both so far?
So there are three teams at the moment that are still yet to lose. They are Carlton Geelong, surprisingly. I think we all slept a little on Geelong in the pre-season.
Yeah.
And GWS. I think GWS, for me, have probably been the most complete and impressive side
yep.
to start the year. Carlton and Geelong are certainly there as well, but they're still missing a few pieces. You know, you look at Walsh hopefully coming back for the Blues this week. Danger's missed a few weeks now with injury as well. So that's the exciting part for Carlton and Geelong, is that they still have a few out. Guthrie's another one. You know, Gary Rowan coming back this week into maybe some VFL action. But GWS, in terms of players that they've got on the park, looking at the forward line, the mids, the back, I think they've been the most impressive so far this season.
Yeah, look, you've stolen everything I was going to say, Abs.
She started with five teams.
I think the Giants for mine have been the most impressive. Mm. Probably, I reckon to back those up are probably, and two that I maybe didn't see coming would be the Swans and Cats. Like
yep.
I thought,
yeah,
I think they've outshone, or at least my expectations. I thought they'd be thereabouts, you know, in the eight, but they're entrenched in the eight at the minute. Obviously, we're only early, but just the quality of footy both those teams are playing, I think they've been a real highlight.
Go to the other end?
Other end. It has to be Adelaide for me.
Yeah.
It pains me to say it, but me too.
Yeah, like I had expectations for them. I felt like they were building. They just haven't been able to find the avenue to goal, kick winning scores. You know, with how dynamic they were on offense last year, teams have worked out how to slow them and stifle them. Like, their forwards aren't having anywhere near the impact they did have last year. So they've got a lot to work through, and their season could be over. Whereas at the start of the year, I was pushing, thinking, you know, I reckon they sneak in, and yeah. they probably challenge with the way they played last year, but they just don't look. They don't look the same unit.
And they've got Carlton this week as well. So if they can come out and do something incredible, great, and we'll all be rolling in on Monday saying, how good are the Crows?
They're
here
back.
We go. They're going to go on a run. But this is a big test for them. You know, the D's, where they came home strong against the D's, went down by 15 points, unfortunately, but they need a full four-quarter effort, 100% buy-in, 100% just attack. And I would be happy to see Adelaide get scored heavily against on yeah. turnover and, yep. and on transition, but to see them find that DNA yeah, that they had last year.
The boldness on offense.
Yeah. So watch this space on the weekend. No doubt Matty Nix will have them razzed up, ready to go. But Carlton on the weekend, that's a big test for the Crows.
It's going to be a very interesting round of footy, this one. And it starts tomorrow night with Melbourne and Brisbane at the MCG. Abs, are you hosting tomorrow night?
I am.
Look at you go.
Oh, very exciting.
She's just, there'll come a point.
She's in a new stratosphere.
Oh.
Well, certainly not the one that I live in. And Jonesy, what's up for you this weekend?
I'll just be kicking back on the couch with my kids watching the footy.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, how many? All four?
Four of them, yeah.
Gazillion.
Yeah.
That came through on the WhatsApp message yesterday. Sorry, yeah. guys. Trying to get four kids organised at dinner
time.
Twins.
It's like another job. When you get home from work, I feel for mothers out there.
Absolutely. They're all doing a good job.
They're doing an amazing job.
Listening. So thank you very much. This has been Footy Talk, of course. Tomorrow, Daisy Thomas, Heath Shaw back in the chair. Strap yourself in for that one. We'll catch you next time.